Good morning. It's my honor to be able to present to you the governor of the state of Louisiana. On January 11, 2016, Governor John Bel Edwards was sworn in as the 56th governor of Louisiana. He grew up in Amy, Louisiana, as one of eight children who learned the importance of public service at an early age. With four Tangipahoa Parish sheriffs in his lineage, Governor Edwards graduated in 1988 from the United States Military Academy at West Point. The governor served 8 years as an airborne ranger on active duty with the United States Army and commanded a rifle company in the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He went on to graduate Order of the Croix at Louisiana State University Law Center and set up a civil law practice in his hometown of Amy. In 2008, he was elected to the Louisiana House of Representatives from District 72, where he served for 8 years until the voters of Louisiana elected him governor in November 2015. Governor Edwards and his wife, First Lady Donna Edwards, have three children, Samantha Bell, Sarah Ellen, and John Miller. I do believe this is the first time we've had a governor speak to our group. Governor Edwards is here because he is a friend of the public pension systems in Louisiana. I speak from personal knowledge of this because in 2012, when our systems were under attack, the words used by Jennifer Shea yesterday, John Bel Edwards was more than our friend, he was our champion. So I thank you, Governor, and I welcome you.
It's a pleasure to be with you all this morning. You know, speaking of retirement, my mind is changing just a little bit. My perspective is changing a little bit because I turned 50 on Friday and all the AARP cards started coming out. So I guess I'm getting closer than I probably want to. Look, we've had a very challenging time over the last several months. And I wanted to give you all a little update on the flood before we talk about retirement. But as you know, or I hope you know, South Louisiana experienced in August unprecedented historic flooding. And I just want to go through the numbers to kind of put it in perspective for you all. The meteorologists, the climatologists, they all just decided that 7 trillion gallons of rain fell in South Louisiana in 48 hours. Now that's such a big number that it's hard to, you know, wrap your mind around it. But understand this, it takes the Mississippi River 18 days to discharge that much water to the Gulf of Mexico. So it's like having a garden hose all over South Louisiana putting out that much water over such a short period of time. We've had 130,000 homes, give or take, because we're still counting, damaged. 130,000, 80% of them did not have flood insurance. But the overwhelming majority of those weren't required to because they didn't live in the flood zone. So we've got some significant challenges, but I'm very pleased with the way people are coming together, and not just the state, not just local government, although I will tell you the first responders were truly magnificent. The way they went out and assisted people early on getting them out of their homes. There were more than 30,000 people rescued from their homes. 30,000. And that doesn't count neighbors helping neighbors. That's local government, state government, National Guard. But the way that people have come together in Louisiana just to be neighbors to one another, the way the faith-based community has stepped up, the way employers have stepped up to help their employees. But right now, we've got some critical things going on because we've got a lot of homeowners across South Louisiana deciding, do they stay in their homes? Business owners, do they reopen their businesses? And to a large degree, this is going to be determined by whether there is help coming, because many of these folks don't have a bank account from which they can withdraw funds to go out and pay for these improvements. And they don't have insurance, I just told you that. And so we have to make sure that we're doing everything we can, working with our federal partners to bring assistance back to Louisiana as soon as possible and in large enough increments to where it's meaningful assistance. To that end, I was very pleased last week, a week ago today, when the President requested $2.6 billion in community development block grant funding from Congress in the continuing resolution that they are taking up this week. It remains to be seen how much we will get in the continuing resolution, but I can tell you the meetings that we had there over the last 2 weeks, very, very positive. We met, and when I say we, Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and myself, Ag Commissioner Mike Strain, we went and met with Thad Cochran and his staff. Of course, he's the Senate Appropriations Chairman. We met with Senator Mikulski and her staff. She's the minority leader on the Appropriations Committee. We've met with Speaker Ryan. We've met with Senator Harry Reid and his folks. We went and met with Hal Rogers, the Chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. We met with anybody who was willing to give us just a few minutes to tell them about this historic, unprecedented flood. And the reason we had to do that is because in August, when this flood happened, because it wasn't a named storm, it wasn't a tropical storm or a hurricane that was being tracked through the Gulf, and so you didn't have the national news with their reporters in the rain and the wind reporting live, and so the people of the United States were largely unaware of what happened. We also had all of the coverage being dominated by the Olympics and the presidential election. And so many people came back, many congresspeople came back from their August recess after Labor Day, knowing that there was a flood at Baton Rouge, but without really much understanding of how severe it was and how it's actually going to be the third or fourth most damaging, most severe flood event in United States history. Think about that. So we've got a lot of work to do. I will tell you, I've been very pleased with the way the congressional delegation has stepped up to work with me, but to really educate their colleagues both in the House and the Senate. I can tell you that we've all been on the exact same sheet of music, asking for the same assistance, and I think we're going to be successful. And we're not going to get everything that we want in the continuing resolution, because we were asking for social services block grant funding, we were asking for emergency transportation funding, we were asking for the Combi River Diversion Project to be funded through the Corps of Engineers. That's about $125 million by itself. So there are many other things that we're going to ask for, and we'll try to get it in the November-December timeframe in the lame duck Congress. But I wanted you to know we're working extremely hard, trying to make sure that the people of Louisiana know that help is on the way, so that as they make decisions about whether to stay in their homes, whether to reopen their businesses, that decisions to do just that will be viable. So I also wanted to talk to you just a little bit about the Shelter at Home program, which is really ramping up this week. It is a program where, and many of you have members, colleagues, maybe even some of you in this room, whose homes were damaged. And they were damaged by floodwaters to the extent that they're not safe, habitable, and secure. Well, one of the things we were able to negotiate with FEMA is they're going to underwrite a program where we can go into a home and for $15,000 or less, make it safe, habitable, and secure, so that people can return home and shelter there while they work through all of the permanent repairs. That's what we want to do, because as I went to shelters, as I visited with people who were cleaning out their homes, they wouldn't want to go home. And until we get people in their homes, we're not going to have students in schools. We're not going to have businesses with customers. We're not going to have employers with employees. And on Sundays, we're going to have pews that are too empty. So we're trying to get people back in their homes as soon as possible. This is the fastest that any program has ever been initiated of this type anywhere in the country. And of course, the goal isn't just to get it fast, it's to get it right. And so we intentionally left ourselves some flexibility to make changes as we move along. But if you know people out there who suffered damages to their home, and they have not yet registered for shelter at work. I'm sorry, shelter at home. Please make sure that they do that. And by registering with FEMA for a disaster assistance claim, that is not the same thing as registering for shelter at home. It's two different registrations that are required. And so I would just ask you to lean forward and help us with that. Finally, many of you communicate with your members through newsletters, through emails. Mental health is always a challenge following disasters like this. Because you have members, especially your members, those who are retired, who are on fixed incomes, they thought they had everything they needed to be secure for the rest of their life in their home. Their single biggest investment was their home. And now they may not have the insurance to repair it. They don't have the bank account. They're sitting there looking at a mess. And many people, and sometimes it doesn't manifest itself right away, but many people over time will come to be depressed or worse. And there is assistance for those folks. Now, I told you that we're going to try to get the social services block grant in November and December. We tried to get it in the continuing resolution. A good part of that money is going to go to those agencies that help with mental health treatment. But we also have right now $8.2 million that came from Health and Human Services on an expedited basis so that we can try to reach out and help people with mental health issues. So please, as you communicate with your members, let them know that there is help out there. They're not alone. And that they're going to recover from this, just as we always do in Louisiana, because we truly are resilient people, we're resourceful people, we're diligent and hardworking, and this is just one more bump in the road. But at the end of the day, we're going to do everything we can to help these people make sure that their lives, which right now are upside down, that they get turned right side up soon enough. Now, with respect to public pensions. You know, Cindy told you that I am a champion for you all. Well, I suppose that's true. But what I try to do is study the facts and not be influenced unduly by just the political rhetoric. There are so many people who look and see the fiscal challenges that the state is facing. And they just assume, based on what they hear on TV or when they go to their meetings on Wednesday or wherever they go and at their coffee groups or whatever, that it's our public retirement systems that are putting the most strain on our system and that there must be a way to improve that. And quite frankly, there's always ways to improve it. What they don't know is over the last couple of decades, we have done a lot of things to improve all of the systems in Louisiana. But they just assume that unless we get away from the defined benefit plan, we're always going to have these problems. Well, I made it my business to study our defined benefit plans. And you may notice that last year at this time, I was the only candidate for governor who refused to say that we should move away from them. In fact, I embraced them, not that they're perfect, not that we can't continue to do things to improve them. But the fact of the matter is that the normal cost of our plans is lower than the cost of an employer contributing to Social Security for the employee. And so where are you going to save money? How can you save money over that system and still afford people dignity and security in their retirement? And in fact, in 2012, I think that's what Cindy was referring to, we had on the floor of the House a cash balance retirement plan that was going to replace the defined benefits plan that we currently have for new employees. The reason it required a two-thirds vote is because it had an actuarial note. It meant it was going to cost more than our current system. But the benefits were going to be less for our members. And so we just have to make sure that we're not defensive. And when people ask me, will you consider pension reform? I always say, absolutely, I will consider it. It's going to have to be for new employees only. Can't have an actuarial cost to it. It's going to have to afford people dignity and security in their retirement. And it's going to have to be approved by the IRS before we implement it, because if it's not a Social Security equivalent plan, guess what? We get 2 or 3 years down the road, we got to go back and start paying Social Security on everybody in addition to whatever we're paying into the retirement system for them. But if we can come up with a system that does those things, I'm absolutely happy to consider it. And I don't foreclose the possibility that it can be done, but I haven't seen any proposals that do it. And until we do, it is premature to say we have to get away from our public defined benefit pension plans. So, for many people, it is a matter of political philosophy where they just assume that everything they hear on TV that's true with respect to other states has to be true with respect to Louisiana. And is it painful to have to make those payments on the unfunded accrued liability? You bet it is. I inherited the largest deficit in the history of our state, a $2 billion state general fund for the year that started July 1st of this year. That payment on that UAL is tough. But that payment on the UAL is going to be made next year, even if we change the system this year. That's what people don't understand. It isn't like you can change the system and that UAL goes away. But what I know is we saved over $8 billion in costs because of changes already made to our defined benefits plan. What I know is that if you just take lasers and TRSL, they've saved $1.4 billion here recently. And the Pew Charitable Trust did a study of all the pension systems in the state. And contrary to what y'all might hear publicly stated, where supposedly we have one of the worst, it's actually one of the five best. And what they did is they looked at positive amortization. Now, I'm not going to try to explain that because I don't fully understand it. But they looked at the long-term health, not just whether we're able to meet our investment income objectives in any given year or make our payments in any given year, but over time, what are we doing? And we're one of the five best in the country. But that word doesn't get out somehow. Even though it's a fact, it doesn't get out. So we need to make sure that that happens. So in the positive amortization, what they call it is the true health of the pension plan, but taking the long view. And the long view is what we should always take when it comes to pension health. The year-to-year snapshots are very interesting, and of course you want to see that the revenue to the system exceeded what the expectations are, because that relieves a little pressure. But those year-to-year snapshots are not the most important thing. And we have exceptionally well-managed plans over the long term, and that's why I remain committed to them. So these systems are sustainable, precisely because many changes already have been made. But there's no doubt we have a long road ahead of us. And I would ask you all to continue to be diligent, continue as you always do to have professional, factual discussions with people when they talk to you about pension reform and what we need to do going forward. Look, nobody wants taxes to be higher than they have to be. And if they think the taxes are higher in order to support overly generous systems, then they are going to push back against that. But if they understand that any replacement to your system that you have currently is likely to be more expensive over the long run, you can sort of reason with people at that point. But it shouldn't always be purely about dollars and cents. When you have a lady or a gentleman who have committed to the state of Louisiana a career of dedicated service, educating our children, building our roads, guarding inmates, or as my mother did as an emergency room nurse in a charity hospital for 30 years, they are due dignity and security. And we are obligated as a state to provide it. And so as we look at the challenges associated with funding our pension systems, we can never forget about that obligation. It's got to count for something. And for me, it does. I will never forget the day that my mother realized after my dad died that she wasn't getting any of his Social Security. And if you look at the last 10 years, and I may not be exactly right, Cindy will correct me, I'm sure. I think in all but 2 years, Social Security gave COLAs, and in the state of Louisiana, it was only 2 years that we did. I was very proud, by the way, right after this session ended, to sign a cost of living allowance for our people in Louisiana that on average, about $30 a month, a tank of gas. But you know, it makes a big difference to those folks. And I want to thank Senator Beryl Peacock this year because he worked on that as well. So thank you very much, Senator. But we have to continue to work. We have to continue to do better. We have to look for more opportunities to grant COLAs. And let me tell you, if a COLA is possible, given all of the limitations that we have in law, it is the right thing to do. You're never going to have to worry about John Bell Edwards not supporting a COLA if one lands on my desk. Because if one crosses over all those hurdles and goes through all those hoops and lands on my desk, I promise you, I will sign it. That is not going to even be a close call for me. So I'm just going to ask you to continue to do what you've been doing. Be very professional. Be diligent. But don't be afraid, and I suspect you're not because you're in this room. Don't be afraid to defend the defined benefits plan, because we are unique in many ways from what is going on around the country. And every time I meet with a group, typically a business group, but it could be a lot of different people, and we talk about structural reform in Louisiana to make sure that we can live within our means, because going forward, we still have tremendous challenges. We did stabilize our state to a very large degree through a combination of very painful cuts and revenue increases, which are not popular. But as we move forward, there are going to be a lot of folks who continue to put pressure, saying we need to move away from that defined benefits approach. Don't be afraid to engage them, because it's engaging them that will cause the conversation to change, so that people will take notice of the fact that not all the problems that other states are having are we having here in Louisiana. I know that I always push back. I say, yeah, I'll absolutely consider that. But before I consider that, I need you to consider a few things too. And then just tell them some of the things that we just talked about. And quite often they will be surprised, because they've never considered that our system might actually be working. That it does afford people some sense of dignity and security, and that it is a good bargain for the people of Louisiana. And by the way, the UAL is not the fault of our employees. It's not the fault of our retirees. For too many years, politicians knowingly, intentionally underfunded the state's obligation to the pension system, because they knew that the problems associated with doing that wouldn't be manifest for decades. And they decided to build roads and bridges and do other projects instead. And so that's how that UAL came about. And so the exact wrong thing to do is to punish people who are members of our systems and our retirees because of the UAL that developed through no fault of their own. They have always paid every month, every penny that was expected of them into the system. It was the state that did it. And we should never lose sight of that. So going forward, my approach will not change. If there's a better way, I'm willing to sit down and listen to it. But if it doesn't meet those criteria, the simple fact of the matter is, it's not a better way. And we're not going to change just for change sake. We're not going to change just so that we're like some other states that have done some things that might have made sense for them. I don't know. I don't govern those other states. But working together, I suspect that so long as I'm your governor, we're going to protect the systems that we have. We're going to make them better. We're going to save money where we can. We're going to issue COLAs where we can, because it's the right thing to do for the people of Louisiana. And going forward, we have tremendous challenges, as I mentioned a while ago. But I don't want anybody in the room thinking that we're not going to meet those challenges, that the legislature and I aren't going to work together, because we are. Long-term structural tax reform in April is critically important if we're going to have the stability in Louisiana that we need to have, not just for a few years, but for decades. And it's that stability that we've been lacking in Louisiana. But we're going to get it done. And the simple fact of the matter is, it's going to require a lot more courage than these sessions this year, because we're going to be making long-term changes in the way we do things in Louisiana. But we have to. We have a state right now with cash flow problems. Not just whether we have enough money to run the state. We don't have the inter-fund borrowing capacity to carry the state forward the way we have in years past, so that we pay our bills, which are relatively uniform month to month, until the revenue comes in, which comes in disproportionately after the first of the calendar year. That's why you saw last week the bond commission approved, I think it was $400 million, where we could go out and borrow money. That's the first time in 30 years that's happened. We have cash fund flow problems in the capital outlay program as well. But these challenges give us a real opportunity to enact meaningful changes so that we are more responsive and more responsible all at the same time. And if we are successful, and we're going to be, you're going to see stability in Louisiana like you've not seen in the past. And that's what people want. If they're going to come into Louisiana and invest their dollars here so that we can grow our economy, create jobs, if we're going to secure that investment, we have to offer people stability. You don't have to offer them the lowest tax burden in the country. If that were enough, we would have everything we wanted to have in Louisiana today. And in fact, there are many CEOs of the biggest corporations in the country choosing other states with a higher tax burden than Louisiana. They've been doing this for decades because those states offer predictability. Those states are investing more money in their transportation infrastructure. They're investing more money in K-12 education and higher education. Their quality of life is deemed to be better. Now, I don't know why anybody would ever want to choose to live anywhere other than Louisiana, to be honest with you. But given our natural resources, given our strategic position on the map with the Mississippi River right here, the largest port complex, one of the largest port complexes in the world, with all of those benefits, why is it that we struggle? It doesn't make sense. We have to do better. We are going to do better. With your help, our best days are ahead of us. Please pray for the great state of Louisiana. Pray for all of our leaders that we will have the courage and the sense to come together and do what's best for the people of Louisiana, and that we can continue to do best for you all and your members as well. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Governor Edwards. We appreciate his comments. We first met him at a Retired State Employees Association meeting in Covington, back when he was newly elected to the House of Representatives. And at all those meetings, we invite the local delegation members to come and make some comments. And this young lawyer gets up there and starts talking about public retirement systems and COLAs, and he knew what he was talking about. We were like, who is that guy? And it was quite impressive that he actually had a working knowledge of retirement systems and our defined benefit plans before we even got to meet him. So it's been a pleasure to work with him when he was in the House of Representatives, and he was our champion during some rough times. So we're happy to have him in the governor's office now. So I wanted to follow up on something that the governor said about his mother not receiving the Social Security benefit from his father's account after his father's death. That's due to the government pension offset, and it does have a hardship for many of our members who receive public pensions, and yet this federal law keeps widows, widowers from receiving benefits from their spouse. There's also the offset that's called the windfall elimination provision that offsets those of us who have public pensions who also earned a benefit from Social Security from private employment. So those offsets, we all know, we've seen impact our members in a very difficult way. So one of the things that I am representing laborers on is this group called the Coalition to Preserve Retirement Security. And that group, known as CPRS, Labors has been a member of since it was established in 1999. The Labors members prorate the annual dues for our membership in that system. That group advocates to maintain the Social Security system, which does not impose mandatory participation on state and local governmental units and their employees. CPRS has a board of director that consists of 15 members, and I, as I said, am the Labor's representative. I'm also the vice president of that organization. There's six other states that don't have mandatory Social Security for public employees. That's Alaska, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Nevada, and Ohio. They all opted out of Social Security in the 1950s. But all other states have at least some group of public employees that don't participate in Social Security, usually in the public safety arena. Texas, though, has a large group, and that's teachers, who don't participate. One of the problems that CPRS has when we advocate to avoid mandatory Social Security is one of the remedies for the WEF and GPO hardships people talk about is, well, just put everybody in Social Security and they won't be offset. So, the difficulty there is it would cost our state a substantial amount if we made that switch. But CPRS is following this resolution that's now in Congress. It's H.R. 711, and it's got two authors who are, one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. So the bipartisan support is unique. Representative Kevin Brady from Texas is the main proponent of it, and he's also the chair of the Ways and Means Committee this year. And it's also co-authored by Representative Richard Neal, who's a Democrat from Massachusetts. And what they would do is change the formula for the WEP to try to make it more fair by recognizing actual earnings. And now that Social Security has the records for that to happen, it may actually happen. So it was up for consideration on July 13th in the committee, and Congressman Brady pulled it at the last minute. He said that there was not adequate support to move forward, that there was still some disagreement on how it would apply. So it got pulled. I talked to the guy who represents CPRS in our lobbying efforts in Congress and asked him if there was any hope that this would come back up this year. And he said he thought so because Brady was so passionate about it, but he might have to accept an amendment. And the actuary for Social Security would have to give more specific information about winners and losers under proposal. So he thinks it's possibly going to be back up in November or December, so we'll keep an eye out for that, and hopefully we'll see some progress, and I'll keep you posted via email if something happens there. So how do you like that? I just took my presentation from tomorrow morning and made it right now. So tomorrow morning we can start at 8:45. And we can now take a break till 10 a.m. We'll then have Kathleen Allen talking to us about the code of government.